Hi, and welcome to the Psychology Sisters podcast. I'm Amy, a registered psychotherapist.
And I'm Kat, a registered psychologist. As well as being best friends, we specialise in relationships, friendships, anxiety, mental health issues, confidence, work-life balance, setting and achieving goals, and overall guidance on how to slay life one day at a time.
In this podcast, we cut through all the vague well-being advice to offer you specific, scientific, and evidence-based information to help give you the skills and knowledge needed to master the art of life.
Now, let's dive deep into today's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to PT2, part two
of PC2.
Shit. Of relationships, we have just had a lot of coffee.
Yep. We are so much coffee.
So ready to go. So today we are going to deconstruct dating in the millennial world. So we are looking into, firstly, love languages, which is super cool. We'll talk about attraction, getting over someone you never dated, ghosting, and we'll talk about societal expectation around dating. We'll talk about Tinder, Bumble, and everything else in between. We'll also add in some perspective from men because I feel like I want to try and represent men a little more. So
sounds good. Let's get into it.
Psyched. So Amy, I want you to maybe talk to people about love languages.
Yes. So Gary Chapman wrote a really amazing book which describes love languages, which is how we show and receive love. So one of the quotes, how he described love, was, "Adults all have a love tank. If you feel loved by your spouse, the whole world is right. If the love tank is empty, the whole world can begin to look dark." So it's basically how we express our love language to our partner and then how we receive our partner's love language and how that can make us feel loved, essentially.
Yeah. And just because you might have one way to express love, it doesn't mean that your partner has the same way to express love.
And we often show love and feel love differently as well. Yeah, definitely. So there are five love languages. So the first one, there's acts of service. So acts of service might be
doing the washing.
Yeah, doing something for your partner without being asked that you know could really help them.
Yeah, taking them on a date. Could be cleaning their car, anything that's, you know, that's going to help your partner out. That's an act of service.
Like, or even if you notice that they're being a bit stressed or a bit run down, you know, you might just do something just to help them out. So yeah, like you said, doing the cleaning or something really simple. Giving them a massage. Then there's words of affirmation. So this is giving them lots of verbal reassurance and validation. So saying things like, You are amazing. Beautiful. Yeah. I love you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, like, lots of verbal reassurance. Like, I really appreciate it when you do that for me. Yeah, definitely.
You're such a hard worker. You're such a good father, son, or as
I really love it when. Receiving gifts. So gift giving isn't necessarily about the material object. When we talk about love language and gift giving, usually it's the thought and the sentiment behind the gift that is how the love is shown. So you might have a favorite jeweler or something that's really sentimental to you, and they buy you like a small token that's like, oh, I know you really love this and you're important to me and here's how I'm showing my love kind of thing. So physical touch is another love language. So that's just not about sex. It's about affection and intimacy. So and physical closeness. So it might even just be that person sitting super close to you on the lounge, you know, so that your shoulders are touching.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
holding hands,
cuddling,
stroking
the legs, those kinds of little signs of affection. And then the last one is quality time. So this is all about giving the person your undivided attention and actively listening to them.
Yeah. So love languages are something that is really helpful in couples counseling. That's something that is really helpful to know about your partner. So, for example, I like to be loved by affection. By receiving affection, I feel loved also by words of affirmation. And I think that's pretty similar to you.
My love language is quality time, and then I show love through words of affirmation.
And so my partner Josh, he feels loved when I do acts of service for him. So cleaning, and he also feels loved by affection. So you need to show love to that person to how they show love to you.
You need to be speaking the same language.
So for Josh, I know it's really important that I help him clean the house, or I do something for him, because he feels really loved when I do that. He understands the same language that I'm speaking to him. And similar, my love language is words of affirmation and affection. So in order for me to feel loved by him, he has to speak my language, giving me a cuddle, words of affirmation. You need to understand your partner to know how they feel loved and how they show love as well, which is super important. Because I think as girls, you think, they're not telling me that they love me, or they're not telling me how beautiful I am. But sometimes you forget to look for the other things they might be doing. They might be helping you service your car. They might be doing that, because boys find it really hard to express their feelings. And so they might show their feelings through other ways. And sometimes as women, we don't pick up on that. We expect it to be like the movies.
Because we're focusing on ourselves and we're not feeling loved. And, and we tend to expect that love is shown the same way we feel it.
When I tell you I love you, why don't you tell me back? Or I tell you you're handsome, why don't you tell me I'm beautiful?
Whereas Chapman acknowledges all need some different things, and that we all speak more than one language, but we usually have a primary language that helps us meet the needs of our partner, which can help us refill our love tanks.
I love that. Love tank.
Well, we often speak about filling our cup, don't we? So that's what resonated with me. So when you feel full and you feel really loved, and as opposed to feeling like, oh, I feel a bit empty. I'm not getting that love that, that I need.
And that would have a domino effect in your life if you're feeling loved in your relationship. I know for me personally, if I feel loved in my relationship, and it's not just my intimate relationships with Josh, but my friendships, my relationships with my mum and dad, with my other friends, that for me, my relationships are the core to how I feel loved. So if I'm feeling loved in my relationships, I'm a lot happier, or I feel a lot more positive about my outlook on life. Whereas if something's happening in my relationships, any relationship of my life, I take that into my workplace, or I'll take it into, you know, my personal life, and I'll really struggle with dealing with it.
And I think that's interesting too, that, like, you know, we have one primary love language, but we also have a couple of different ones too. And what you just said about the way your mood kind of changes in response to, you know, how loved you're feeling, I feel like when my mood is like that, I require different language of love. So for me, even though quality time is my primary love language, when I'm feeling a little bit unloved, or I might be missing, there might be something else that I'm craving. So, and then I think that's where words of affirmation comes in for me, is sometimes I need that verbal reassurance. If I'm feeling a little bit like my love tank is needs filling up.
It's flashing.
That's it.
And we're not just saying that you only have two or three. You know, you can have all of them at different stages of your life, and at different, you know, in different circumstances. And touching on friendships, I know for you, Ames, the way that I show you love is words of affirmation and spending time with you and getting you gifts. Like, that for me, I'm like,
you're very generous.
And I like, that's how I show you love. And and I feel that sometimes it works in friendships too. Like, I have friends who it's just spending time with them, or it's just sending them a quote or tagging them in memes. And that's, you know, it works with every kind of relationship you have, is showing that, you know, the love languages of how much you love them. So I think also, if you are listening to this and you're unsure of what love languages you are, or how you express love, or what language you're fluent in, and there is a quiz online. I think it's on the
Just Google love languages. Yeah, and it can be really fun to do with your partner together. I know I've done that in the past. We've done it together and been like, oh, like, what's your love language? And then it kind of just opens up a space to explore and communicate how you show and receive love. You can learn a little bit about yourself and each other.
Because you might not realize, you might just think, oh, my partner isn't showing me these words of affirmation, or they're not telling me how much they love me. Certainly this is something I struggle with personally, is where's the words of affirmation? That's what I need the most. But I was forgetting that there's four other languages that I wasn't picking up on, that I was like, yeah, all right, you're servicing my car and you're spending time with me. Like, that's all great, but where's my, you're beautiful.
I need the reassurance.
All right, you're Mr. Perfect, but you're missing this one crucial thing.
Just pat me and tell me I'm pretty.
So yeah, so that's love languages. And if you need more information, Google love languages, Gary Chapman, and there's a book you can read. Super duper interesting, really, really helpful for relationships that sometimes you might feel like you're not on the same level as someone, or you might feel like you know that you love each other, but there's some conflict with showing it or feeling it or receiving love or giving love. So definitely give the
book a read. Might be that classic, like you don't feel that they love you as much as you love them, vice versa. Yeah.
And that can be frustrating because you might raise that with your partner or friend and you can say, look, I feel like I love you more. And that's a difficult conversation to have at the best of times. And it's that frustration, but you might not be realizing that they're showing their love in a different way. Yeah. And that's quite reassuring when you do that quiz. It's like, oh, I get it. Yes. You show love in that way. And as I said, men typically, I'm not saying that all men, but typically men do find it quite hard to express how they're feeling, whether it's a stigma around.
But interestingly, when I have done this quiz with either clients or in my relationships, a lot of the time it comes back with either words of affirmation or quality time.
Oh, really?
And you expect it to be like acts of service or gift giving. Funnily enough, that's something that I've noticed.
Yes, interesting. Attraction, sorry, not affection. Attraction. So attraction is essentially, I guess,
kind of like that thing that makes you go, ooh, hello. Oh,
hello. It's like the spark you have
into
with someone.
You. Yeah. It kind of gets the tingles and the flutters going.
The butterflies. So it's the initial, and generally all attraction starts with physical. Unless you're online dating.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a thing, isn't it? Because even online, the first thing that grabs you is usually a picture, like a photo, and you're drawn
to the attraction,
and that is essentially like all physical.
That's true. But then when you are,
because there's no like body language or you know how that person presents, other than
you've just got that
physical
image in front of you.
Yeah.
So you need to depend on the emotional attraction you have with them in order to sustain a relationship. Because if they got really bad banter or they just don't seem interested, then although you have that initial physical attraction, you know, you also do need the emotional attraction too if you want a relationship. Whereas, you know, some people might just want the physical attraction, the sexual attraction, and that's okay. But I think most people that I know or clients that I've seen are seeking a relationship, and attraction is a huge part of that. And sometimes it can be so different for people. So, for example, you might meet a partner, and I know you've had this, Amy, where it's, oh my God, like head over heels, you have the spark, it's the magic, it's the lust, it's the, oh my gosh, I have that instant attraction to you.
You become completely infatuated with the person.
It's instant.
And then, that's the attraction when like you just want to rip each other's clothes off. And
the lust.
Yep, you're completely drawn to each other, and it's that chemistry and fireworks. Definitely.
Whereas you can have relationships where the spark, there's this imaginary spark. I don't know how to explain it psychologically.
We're both trying to explain this spark.
Where does this come from?
What even?
I don't know. Whereas other relationships, you have an attraction to them, but it might not be as intense as...
It's like a slow burn.
Yeah, the slow burn. So you might think, oh, yeah, they're really cool, they're really funny. And then the more time you spend with them, you think, oh, wow, like they're actually really lovely and I'm actually really starting to like them. And I find that if I like someone for their character and their personality and their kind and they kind of tick all my boxes emotionally, then I will find them physically more attractive because they have a kind heart.
That's exactly right. I feel like once I fall in love with someone as a person, everything about them becomes attractive.
Yeah, and also I've dated people who've been super attractive. Well, I thought they were super attractive, my perception of them. And then they've been really awful, or they've had a mean personality, or they've been really unkind to people, and I've just instantly thought, oh,
yuck.
I don't find you as physically attractive anymore. And I don't know if that's the same for guys.
I think so. I think from conversations with male friends, they've been like, yeah, she's smoking hot, but she was a mean person, or you know, she gossips, or she's, you know, that kind of thing. Like, you can definitely be turned off someone physically by their personality. And then I think that also raises the other question of, can a partner who's you've never really been that physically attracted to grow attraction with time based on their personality?
Yeah. I think it comes down to feeling, kind of like our last podcast, feeling loved. If someone makes you feel loved and safe and you feel happy with them and you feel 100% yourself, I think the attraction can grow, but it also can't, like it also, it might not, you know, and that's okay because unfortunately attraction is the one, is something that we might not have much control over.
And physical attraction in a relationship is so important. It sounds really superficial and it sounds really shallow, but physical attraction is really important in a relationship.
Yeah, to sustain a relationship. Especially in the initial stages. Yeah.
And to sustain a relationship as well. And there are two different kinds of attraction like we spoke about. Yeah. There's the physical attraction and then there's the emotional attraction as well. So it's physically what women look for in a male, like we've touched on in previous podcasts, is a big, strong, chiseled jawline, deep voice. Yeah. Like, those are all, I guess, physical attractive attributes. And I think for me personally, those are typically the type of male
things that you'll go for.
Yeah. And then emotionally, I'm emotionally attracted to kind, gentle, someone that is interested. I find that really attractive. Yeah. Like when someone is genuinely interested in how your day is and what you've been up to, that kind of thing. I don't know. I find that really attractive.
It certainly is. And I think that the things you find attractive are a result of your
parental relationship.
And your previous relationships. Yes. 10 years ago, if you'd asked me what my perfect man was, it would be very different to what I describe now. My perfect man would have been like, I don't know, 10 foot tall Brazilian underwear model, like an Amazonian. But now, because of all my previous relationships, I want someone who is kind and who has family values and is safe, kind of like what I talked about last podcast. So you think you need experience in these relationships. And that's the thing. You are not immune to bad relationships. Nobody's immune to bad relationships. It sucks. But I think there's no such thing as a perfect relationship. But when you find someone that you want to make it work with, you need to work hard at it. And that's life.
Yeah.
And you can't avoid fuck boys. You can't avoid girls that don't want to be with you. Like,
it's a skill. It is. And I think attraction is emotional, physical, and behavioral. It's this dance between all those things, and then finding someone that you have that compatibility with on an emotional, physical, and behavioral level. And then it is that skill of meeting each other's needs and communicating your needs.
Yeah. And also I find when I talk to clients about this is, yes, it is important in relationships to have needs and to communicate those needs, but it's also really important to try and meet some of those needs on your own, because if you're not happy being single, you're not going to be happy in a relationship because you are looking for this person to fill that void or to fill something that you're lacking. If you can meet your own needs, then a relationship is a bonus and it is something that is complimentary to you and makes you feel amazing. But I think if you're looking for a relationship to, if you're not happy with yourself and you think that a relationship is needed to fill that void, then that might have some negative implications later down the track. And it's okay to be single. Like, we're not saying everybody needs a relationship. Like,
I think, and this is just a personal opinion, everyone should spend a little time as an adult by themselves.
Yeah.
And everyone's different, but I think it's so important to really learn who you are as an individual and what you want in a relationship. And I feel like it can be really beneficial for everyone as an adult to just spend a little bit of time getting to know yourself and what you need from a relationship.
Yeah.
And who you are as a person.
Because a lot of relationships that I've seen professionally and personally, they've been with their partners, long-term relationships, so 4, 5, 6 years, which have been at their late adolescence, early 20s. And so they have never had that time, that really crucial time in your early 20s or late adolescence where you do start to find your own identity and you do start to come into your own a little bit. But if you're with someone, your identity is tied to them. You are a couple, like a two-package person. And then when you break up, it's like, oh my God, who am I? Like, who am I without this person and without their family and without our Sundays together or without...
When to become one.
Yeah. It's hard. It's really hard, but certainly we're not saying that if you're in a relationship, go and be single, please. You know?
Yeah.
If you are single, take it as an opportunity, because I know that you probably want to be in a relationship and that's totally okay, but you will eventually get into a relationship if that's what you want and the other person wants it too. But you're married for however long, 50, 60 years.
Mm.
And so being single, it's like that crucial time to find out who you are and how to meet your own needs.
And we change and like between the ages of, say, 18 to 25, we do so much maturing and developing into our own you know, individuation.
Yeah, and so the person that you met at 19, you loved and you had the same values, might not be the same person you want to be with at 25 because you've changed, your career might change, you might want to travel, and that's okay. And that goes the same with friendships. It's okay if you don't stay friends with your high school friends because people change.
Relationships change all the time.
Changing is growing. I think if you're not growing, then that's kind of a bit concerning because everybody grows in different ways and it's okay. It's scary. I know when I first left high school and I was like, oh my God, I haven't stayed in touch with this person, or I don't really know if I click with that person anymore, but I feel like, you know, they're my high school friend. I need to stay friends with them. Now I'm a bit older, I'm like, it's okay to grow apart from people.
And what attracts us to someone initially might change. Yeah. And then we can lose attraction for someone too.
Totally, you totally can. And I think attraction is, it's a little bit harder in the millennial world because there's Tinder.
So much
more. Bumble, there's Instagram.
Accessible all the time. Yeah.
And so by Tinder and Bumble and dating apps and Instagram being so accessible, it's setting the norm for what attractive women are or attractive men are. Like that is flooding, 1% of the population is flooding 99% of our feed, and so we start to think, oh, this is normal, this hot chick, or like all girls look like that, or we think, oh, all guys look like that. And unfortunately, like, that's not the case. And you know, we touched on our first episode with social media and how it impacts us, but also impacts our relationship and searching for a relationship. Because if you're a guy and you know, think, oh, like, there's so many hot girls out there, why aren't I meeting any of them? Well, because that's not realistic. And same with a girl.
Yeah. Something that's really resonated with Kat and I is in today's society, there seems to be this constant search for doing better. Like, I can do better. I'm happy, but could I be happier?
Yeah.
Like, the grass is always greener.
Yeah.
When the grass is greener when you water it.
When you water it, yeah. So if you are thinking, oh, this relationship, it's hard, this girl just wants to hang out with this guy, is being really clingy and annoying.
Or it's good, but it's not great.
Could be better.
Like, rather than investing and watering, fertilizing the relationship, it's, like, thanks, but next.
The neighbor's grass looks pretty green for me. I might go check out what they're doing to their grass to make it so green. Because we have this instant access to other women and other men. And so if things are going hard in our relationships, or we're thinking,
too hard, next.
Too hard, or she's not my dream girl, or he's not my dream guy, I'm just going to go on Tinder, on Instagram, and I'm going to find them. And so
slide
it's
into someone's DMs.
Slide into the DMs. And that's unfortunately giving you a bit of a false sense of what's out there, because yeah, the grass is green where you water it. If you work hard in your relationship, like, that's where the grass is going to be greener. That's where you need to work hard at, you know.
And that's where you reap the rewards.
Yeah. Bumble, Tinder, dating apps, it's great and it's fantastic for connecting people. But at the same token, it's giving you so many, it's almost too many options.
Too many options.
I was talking to Josh about this. He said when he used to go on Tinder, he would swipe on every girl and then whichever one said yes, he'd swipe into the super hot girls, like super hot. He's like, they were way out of my league, but I could give it a go. And so it's almost like, but if you'd met one of those girls you said no to on the street, and she's probably really cute and attractive, you probably would have, you know, dated her. But because online there's this huge, like, elitism of beautiful and these stunning girls and stunning guys, that's what we go for. We go for the cream of the crop. We don't think about the other 90%.
And I think what you just touched on is really important, is that because of the way we date now, and it's a lot of it is via dating apps, we become almost frightened of real human
connection and contact.
Yeah. So just like you said, he would rather swipe on really attractive girls and talk to them and approach them that way. But initiating conversation with someone in person, you just wouldn't do.
Yeah.
So gone are the days when you'd be at a bar or at a coffee, even not even a nighttime setting. Say you're at, you know, like a cafe or something like that, and you saw someone that you're attracted to.
Yeah.
People are much less likely to approach someone and have an actual human connection and initiate, like, an an in-person transaction.
Because think about it, on your mobile or on your device, it's so much easier to handle rejection. If someone said to you, came up and said to you, Amy, I don't think you're that hot. I don't think this can go anywhere. That would be really hard to take. But if they said it online, you'd be like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, that whatever. Sucks. But, you know,
block,
it's not.
Delete.
You can block and delete them.
You're cancelled.
Get out of my life. But if it's in person, it's quite confronting. It's like, oh, I don't know if I can deal with this rejection. And you also can justify, oh, well, they've never met me, so they might not know who I really am.
Exactly. It depersonalizes it, doesn't it?
It's almost like add to cart. Like, you know, when you're shopping for clothes, you think like girls or on Tinder, add to cart. I like that.
And we hear there's this, that's so true. And we hear this all the time when working with clients or even just our friends, that most of the time Tinder and Bumble doesn't actually eventuate to a date.
No.
It's just talking to a stranger to give you a little bit of validation, give you a little bit of, you know, like, oh, someone
boost.
Matched. Yeah, yeah. Give you that, you know, confidence.
Sometimes people just go on just to get that ego boost. And it does, you know, you think, oh, I'm feeling really shit about myself. I've just broken up with someone or I'm feeling lonely. I'm going to get that ego boost. And it's like, oh, people find me cute still.
Super like.
Oh, my God, super like. You know, online dating has its implications. It's fantastic. And I know lots of people who've met online.
Yeah, I know heaps of people that have met online that are in successful relationships and even married.
Yeah. But at the same time, have that awareness that this is not real life. If you had said no to someone on Tinder, would you have said yes to them in real life? Like if they were face to face with you, I wanted to hang out with you. I can probably assume that 99% of people would say, yep. That sounds good. I'm keen. Whereas on Tinder, because there's so many hot people, attractive people, nah, like I've seen better. I've seen better. And then it's kind of like, well, at the end of the day, if you're choosing girls or guys that are super duper hot, probably other people think they're super duper hot too. So they've got other people going for them.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a vicious cycle online dating.
The struggle's real. The struggle is real.
I was talking to Josh about the reasons why men might fizzle out. Like I'm sure everyone's familiar with getting
women.
Ghosted.
Women. Yeah.
Fear of rejection was one of the reasons why people might ghost or fizzle. Can't be bothered. Just gotten out of a relationship. And I feel like a lot of girls might be looking for a relationship. And so guys think, oh, I've just gotten out of this really hard, draining relationship. I do not want a relationship. Because a lot of people on Tinder do look for relationships. I know it's a dating app.
Being known to be the hookup app.
Yeah. I don't know. I could be totally wrong with this, but I feel like
different people use it for different reasons. Yeah. So there are definitely people that are using it for, like, to find a relationship.
Yeah.
Like, and goal would be to meet someone using it. And there are other people that use it just to meet people, to have a little bit of fun and different strokes for different folks.
Like,
use it however you want to use it. But I think what's important is to communicate what your intentions are. So if you meet someone who, you know, is really interested in a relationship and you're using it basically to, you know,
fornicate,
wink wink, nudge nudge, like then make that clear to the person so that feelings aren't hurt and no one's being. And that's the thing with online dating, you get such a broad
which you don't get in real life. There's lots of people out there and dating is hard, and there are going to be some people you meet, especially online,
interesting people.
And so that's kind of some of the reasons why maybe men do ghost women, and it sucks and it's awful. Also, a man courts a woman generally. Sometimes it can go the opposite way, but generally, and I think females do expect that a little bit. That's societal expectation. And so men try super duper hard, as we're talking about in part one, wanting to sow their seed. Still doesn't get any less gross when I say it. And they have that primal instinct to seek pleasure. And they might not have the frontal lobe that's developed to help them with their rationalization, impulse control. And so you've got a lot of men probably do anything to have sex with someone that they really want to have sex with. And same with women. But being courted, the men's like, yeah, I really want to hang out with you. I want, you know, they're starting to attract you on an emotional level. So as a girl, we like to feel, well, most women like to feel emotionally safe and secure before we have sex with a guy.
The difference is, and I know we're not necessarily talking about love in this instance, but men have sex to show love. Women have sex when they feel loved.
Yes.
And that's the difference.
Yeah, generally. We're just generally speaking here. We're not talking about every single man and female. We know it's different. But generally, the man might court the female and the female's like, all right, I feel loved by you. So I'm going to, you know, let's have sex. And so what happens is that the man has, it's that primal instinct. Oh, I've gotten what I've wanted. And now I'm like, oh, it's almost like a prize. And this doesn't happen all the time, but I'm just trying to explain why this might happen. Men are like, oh, well, okay, next. Mm. It's almost like that was it. It was like a game. It was like a challenge.
Yeah.
And now it's next. And so the female is left being like, WTF. I thought, you know, you're into me, you're courting me, you're texting me all the time, you're going on heaps of dates, and then I finally felt like I liked you.
Mm.
Boom, you leave. Like, it's so frustrating.
And then there's also, we know, the release of oxytocin, which is the love hormone. Yeah. And so, yeah, after we have sex with someone, we get this release of oxytocin and it makes us feel loved. And we get this rush of dopamine and
endorphins.
Yeah, endorphins. And so we naturally want to be around that person and want to connect to that person. And I think that's...
It's such an awful place to be sometimes, because as a girl, and I've certainly experienced this, and we have friends and, all right, well, I've just spent all this time with them and they've been courting me. So I thought they were really interested. Now that I've had sex with them, oh, like they're just gone. They've ghosted me or they've fizzled me out. And that's so confusing. And it's a little bit demoralizing. It's like, oh, it's almost like you feel bad for having sex with someone, which you should never feel bad about.
No.
It makes you feel like, was that the wrong decision? You maybe start to second guess yourself.
Mm.
Is that really the right person for me? Like, did I
sleep with them too soon?
Yeah. You have no idea why someone might ghost you. Mm. No idea. You might have reminded them of an ex. They might have got family issues. But, like, you know, I'm not justifying it, but I'm saying that if you are so hung up on it, it's understandable, but also knowing it's got nothing to do with you. And do you really want to be with someone who ghosts you after having sex with you? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's probably not someone you want to be with, as hard as that can be to accept. It's really tricky, but you're worth more than someone who ghosts you or fizzles you out.
Rather, and one of the reasons why you might be fizzled is someone might be too scared to tell you that they're not into you.
Yeah.
So it's easier for them to just slowly fizzle you out. And I know I'm guilty of doing that. So
confrontation is scary, and I think so much of our life is online now. We don't have to have those skills as much to confront someone. It's easy to just text them or do it online. Definitely. Send them a cheeky email.
I'll get back to you in 1 to 5 business days.
Kind regards. You can never know why people ghost you, but I think from a guy's perspective, that might be some of the reasons. Maybe they're just not ready for a relationship, and that's okay. I don't think you can force someone to be ready for a relationship. And from a girl's perspective, as you're saying, it's maybe you're just not into them. Maybe you're not attracted to them. Maybe there's something about them that you don't like, and that's okay too.
Mm.
But I think it's really, really important to be honest. I know it's really hard, especially the confrontation. Mm. But I think if you're on the same page as someone, I remember when I did that, someone was into me and I was really honest with them. And I said, look, I'm not into you. I think I said it in a really nice way. And I remember just being like, that felt good. And I was like, they're going to get angry or they're going to be mad or they're going to come burn my house down. But that felt so good. I felt really good about that. As hard as it was, we're on the same page now. And
people appreciate honesty. They really do. And that's something that I have to constantly remind myself of, is that, their feelings might be hurt, but in the long run, they're much better off with that honest information so that they're not left feeling confused.
Yeah,
and was it me? Was it did me? I do something? Did I just say something? Yeah, exactly right. So being honest and upfront is generally the best policy.
Yeah.
But
it's not easy. I know. I can appreciate that it's certainly not easy. And so I feel like sometimes after sex is the power shift.
Oh, yeah. Feel
like women have a much... Because they're being courted, it's almost like you feel like you've got more power if you're being courted. Whereas then as soon as maybe you have sex with a man, they maybe have a bit of a power shift and you're left kind of feeling, where are you? Like, hello.
I kind of feel like before you have sex, it's almost like the woman has the power because the man is chasing.
This is generally speaking. Don't sue us.
It's that thrill of the chase, isn't it? The guy's like,
surprise.
Yeah, exactly right. And then once he has that, it's kind of like this almost balancing out.
I've got that now. What?
Yeah.
What's next? How can I seek pleasure with another person? What's my next challenge? Nobody is immune to that. everybody has gone through really shitty relationships where people have been ghosted. I've been ghosted. I've probably been fizzled out. Like, that is normal. And I think...
I've been the receiver and...
The giver.
And the giver.
And both suck. Both aren't as easy as the other. But just know that you need to go through this stuff in order to learn how to cope with it. And if you're a little bit older and you've been through this stuff, it kind of makes you appreciate someone who does want to be with you so much more, like the commitment. And yeah, you're not immune to it, and you need to go through it to learn that not everyone is on the same page as you, and that's okay. Everyone's different. Men are allowed to sleep with who they want to sleep with. Women are allowed to sleep with who they want to sleep with. It's just getting through those toxic relationships and getting through it and being stronger after it and knowing that you are so worthy of someone who loves you and wants to spend time with you.
Yeah, and I think the take-home message is to know that someone else's actions and thoughts and feelings are outside your control.
You have nothing to do with
them. It's really nothing to do with you. And I think sometimes we can get really hung up on the, you know, what if I did this, or what if they didn't like that about me, or what? You can't control that.
No,
that's
way.
Completely out of your control.
You can be the juiciest peach in the world and there's still going to be...
Someone's not going to like peaches.
Yeah, and that's okay. When you hear that, it's almost like...
Yeah, definitely.
I don't have to be perfect, and because the truth is, not everyone is going to like you in life,
and that's okay.
And that's quite. When I heard that, I was like, oh, "Thank God!"
Yeah,
because it's exhausting trying to please everybody. And that's okay.
Do you remember when we would date?
Yeah,
Kat and I went through this phase when we were both like in our early 20s, and we were dating, and we were on Tinder, and we were just, you know, living our best single life. We would go and get like our hair blow dried. We would buy new outfits, and then we would just kind of rock up and be like, "Oh, just came from work,
just from uni.
I always look like this. Yeah, and we were just trying so hard to be likable.
Yeah, and it's really ironic because with Josh, I didn't try at all.
Mm.
It was the opposite.
Mm.
He would see me at work and be like, "Who is this homeless girl?" Because like, I wouldn't be trying at work. I was in the middle of a breakup.
But even homeless, you're still like, you. Dropped
gorgeous, but you know what I mean? So. Like, it doesn't matter how beautiful you are, how beautiful your hair is, what clothes you're wearing. At the end of the day, do you really want to be with someone that likes you because of what your hair looks like or what clothes you're wearing? No. You want to be with someone that sees you in the worst state of your life.
And still wants to be with you.
And still wants to be like. So this, unfortunately, relationships, we can't, there's no magic. I wish I could just help everybody going through a shit time. And we know people go through shit times. But when you finally let go of a relationship that isn't serving you and isn't making you happy, you open the door to a relationship that does make you happy. And that is priceless. And I believe this is probably not very psychological or science based, but everything does happen for a reason. It's like this universal karma.
And we are
karma.
Big believers in the power of the universe. Like, you're exactly
where,
like,
you need,
where
to,
you
be.
Need to be. Yeah.
This, there's always a lesson with all my relationships that have not failed but have ended. I don't think that's a failure at all, because without them, I would not appreciate my current partner. I would not realize this about myself. Right?
Definitely.
If I had stuck with someone who only liked me because I had really beautiful, fresh, blow-dried hair and really nice clothes, that would not be serving me.
And that's
me.
Not you.
That's not me. I am not that person at all.
You're being authentic.
Yeah, and whoever you are is perfect, and whoever you are, you might have your own struggles and you might have stuff going on and there might be things you don't like about yourself, but you are created perfectly. You are perfect, and if somebody doesn't appreciate that, then that's not worth your time. It's not serving you, and you don't have to settle for someone that likes you for someone that you think is yourself. So,
and if someone doesn't like you, then that's fine.
That's okay.
It's got nothing to do with you. It's just
okay.
Yeah.
People don't have to like you. People don't have to find you attractive. People don't have to think you're the hottest girl in the room everywhere.
Yeah, take
you go.
The pressure off yourself.
Yeah, that's exhausting, trying to get everyone to like you and to be super attractive. Like, that is exhausting.
Mm.
And when you find someone who likes you just for you, in daggy clothes or not,
because
even
that's
trying,
real life.
That's you. Mm. Yeah, and that's such a relief when you do have that person that's like, yeah, you look a little bit derelict.
Derelict.
But I still love you.
So speaking of dating and our experience with going on some little dates.
Yeah, so societal expectation.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about if you are on a date with someone.
What are the women's roles and what are the men's roles when it comes to dating?
So expectations, I think. Yeah. So traditionally, men are expected to, well, this is really old school, court her, organize the date, like ask her on the first date, pick her up, take them to dinner, pay for dinner, drop her home.
That's like a really
that's like
generic,
super conventional. Yep. And yep. that's okay. If you are someone who believes that, that's totally beautiful.
And I think sometimes, and I know for me personally, when I talk to my girlfriends about, oh my gosh, what was the first date like? What was he like? Did he pick you up? Did he pay for dinner? They're all expectations.
I know.
That,
it's like, why do you need
and it's like,
someone
if
to pick
he
you
didn't,
up?
Is he into you?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he didn't offer. Yeah. Maybe he doesn't like me.
That's a whole lot of pressure you're putting on this poor guy who the fact that he got the nerve to ask you is hard.
Yeah.
No, for guys, it's so hard to ask that question.
Yeah.
Give them a break. Give guys a break. And girls who ask guys out, give girls
Go
a break.
Girl. Like, yeah, it doesn't look needy and it doesn't look desperate
no,
for you to like
get
that.
It, girl.
You know what? I'd love to go here. Do you want to come here with me?
I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
Get it, girl. So I think that's the expectation, which people still live by that. And that's if that's what you do with your partner, awesome. That's beautiful. And that's your belief. That's cool. But for me personally, being a female and having a job and having my own money, I feel like, oh, I kind of want to pay. Like, I'll happily pay for my dinner or my meal.
I think it's about, for me, we both work hard for our money and we both appreciate each other. So, you know, whether you take it in turns who pays or I will always at least offer to split the bill.
Also, I feel like part of that is so I don't feel like if you pay the bill, it's almost like I feel in debt to you. Like I need to give you sex
yes.
or I need to.
I'm obligated to you.
Which most of the time guys won't think that. But maybe for me that was like my, it's almost protecting yourself. Like, no, we're even now. Yeah, there was a guy who I'll pay for dinner this time. You got it last time. And he was offended. He was, you know, Persian, so he had that cultural expectation where he got quite upset that I would even offer that, because for him he wanted to make me
feel, it was
feel,
almost disrespectful.
It was disrespectful. He wanted to make me feel special, and I was like, wow, this is so lovely. But at the same time, for me it was a bit uncomfortable. I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about you always paying. But I'm not saying there's a right or wrong here, but for me personally, I'm like, oh, I do like to keep it even. If the guy offers and insists, sure. Like, yes, if you want to do that for me. And even, you know, not just anyone from a different cultural background, like if a guy wants to take you out and pay for it, that's lovely. Let him do that. That makes him feel good too.
Do something little, you know, like if you go see a movie afterwards, get the popcorn.
Yeah.
Like
if you're just getting a coffee, like, you know, get a brownie to share. God, I love brownies.
Oh, yeah. And then talking about expectations when it comes to when you first start dating someone in those initial, you know, few weeks, expectations around sex. So when is too early to sleep with someone? If you sleep with someone on the first date, like, does that mean it's doomed forever and it's only ever going to be sex? Or I feel like there are so many rules and expectations. Yeah, definitely.
At the end of the day, if you want to have sex on the first date, go for it. If you want to have sex
if
on the 17th date, go for it. There's no rules at all.
And everything we've discussed, it's not to say that if you sleep with the guy on the first date, he's going to lose interest in you. Because I know of so many people that have, you know, started a relationship.
From a one-night stand.
From a one-night stand.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's okay because people are at different stages of their life. Not all men are the same. Not all women are the same. So I think expectations, if you are someone who always is thinking, oh, he was good, but he didn't do that or he didn't do that, please stop, because you're putting so much pressure on someone who just wants to take you out.
Yeah.
Just wants to take you out for a coffee. And that's really lovely. And that's really hard to do. You know, it takes a lot of guts. If you are rejected, that's really hard. It's really hard to take. And so just remember, just be really, what's the word I'm looking for?
Gentle,
you know.
Kind.
Really kind, because that takes some absolute balls to ask someone out or just talk to them. So just give them a bit of a break. But be honest, you know, if you're not interested, say, look, you're really lovely, but I'm not super interested in you. That's cool too. The world isn't going to end if you are honest with someone and confront them, honestly.
As we've discussed, you know, honesty is appreciated.
Yeah, it really is. And if it's not, then that's okay, because it's got nothing to do with you.
And I think too, one thing that I've learned and Kat can relate to too is not to change so that people will love you. Just be yourself and the right people will love you anyway.
Oh, I love that. So cute. Right, everybody, well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We are also on iTunes now, so on Spotify. Woo-hoo! And iTunes, kind of a big deal now.
You could say we've made it,
we're ready to retire. So if you enjoy this, please like, I think you can leave us stars. I'm so new to this. I don't know what people do.
We just hope you really enjoy listening to our podcast because we love making them, and you know, hopefully
we're... Please keep letting us know how you like them, because literally we cry. Like, we tear up at my desk, and I know Amy does too. So we love hearing about if you guys liked it or anything you want to hear in the future, or even if you didn't like it, also open to some feedback as well. So thank you so much, guys, for listening. We hope that you really, really enjoyed it, and stay tuned for next week's episode, Mood Food.
I think we're going to be talking about diet and how that impacts our...
And exercise.
Yeah.
Yes. All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode. If you want to see more, please follow us on our Instagram at The Psychology Sisters. Please note, this is purely educational information. If this episode has raised any concerns and you feel you would like to speak to someone, please visit your local GP for further support. Tune in next episode for some more spicy science and sexy self-help.